Buju and welcome back after the holidays to the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials. Today we welcome back Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the current COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Heidi Holton. I am live from the KEXE studios on the frosty banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I want to thank you for listening today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or you can call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with the 18 community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you this COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. We are waiting on the Lieutenant Governor to join us this morning. I want to remind you that there is a loosening of restrictions that'll be happening, according to Governor Walz and the Lieutenant Governor. Tim Walz said the situation in Minnesota is undeniably better than it was last month, and we have reasons to be optimistic. Minnesotans' sacrifice and commitment to their communities help change the pandemic's trajectory and save lives, but we need to protect the progress that we have made. Some of the changes include indoor dining at bars and restaurants can open at 50% capacity with a maximum of 150 people. Parties of no more than 6 people must remain 6 feet from other parties. Bar seating is open to parties of 2. Reservations are required and establishments must close by 10 p.m. It is time for our statewide conversation on COVID-19 and the state's current responses to the pandemic. Joining us is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Thanks so much for being back with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Heidi. It's been a long time.
I know. I missed it. It feels like about 6 months, which is weird, but it's only been a few. So
we've
got a lot of questions this week, which I think is always really good that people want information. And I want to get to those. We're going to be talking about things like vaccines and loosening of the restrictions, testing, the Minnesota legislature. But first, I wonder if I can ask you about the events this week between the Georgia runoff elections and the riders at the U.S. Capitol. It's a lot for all of us to comprehend. You posted on Facebook something that stuck with me through the week. You said, because I think it's really easy for us to get stuck in all of these things, in a pandemic, in political battles, institutional racism. And you wrote that this kind of behavior can be contagious. You said democracy is always a work in progress. We have to tend to it, to care for it, and never take it for granted. We have to decide to end this rhetoric, this behavior, and this violence now. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of expand on that a little bit.
Well, I'd just say generally that this is a moment. This is a moment in our nation and in our state when we have a choice. When we have a choice to determine which side we're on. And I don't mean this within the frame of partisan politics, if you're a Republican and a Democrat or an independent, but whether or not you believe in democracy and free and fair elections. And I certainly know which side I am on. But the rhetoric that we have heard consistently from this president, and make no mistake, right? He spoke on the Capitol Mall and then told people to come with him. Like, this is, he was an instigator. And when that kind of rhetoric goes unchecked, we saw exactly what the consequences of that are as well. And I also just want to name that the double standard that we see right now between the rioters from the, you know, the folks who stormed the Capitol versus the response in Washington, D.C. to Black Lives Matter protests was horrific. And we need to name that. I myself, Heidi, I will tell you as a young organizer, you know, I I was arrested in Washington, D.C. For praying on the steps of the Cannon House office building, along with 115 clergy and faith leaders. We were praying for a more just budget that would not hurt the poor. And I will tell you, I was zip-tied and put in a bus. And that kind of response versus what we saw on Wednesday is chilling. And we have to keep talking about it, and we cannot normalize this kind of behavior.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, let's get to some of the specifics or questions that came in this week that have to do with changes in Minnesota restrictions when it comes to COVID-19. We heard from Sarah. She said the number of new cases dropped significantly when you and the governor dialed things back and imposed more restrictions. Now we're moving the dial back the other way. Logically, doesn't that mean that the cases are just going to start going up again? We haven't vaccinated that many people yet. Why don't you and the governor keep things dialed back until more people are vaccinated?
So I appreciate that question. You know, when we move the dials, we consider three factors: how best to slow the spread of the virus, the state's economy and Minnesotans' well-being, and then we listen to the best advice of public health experts who are serving our state. We were at a really scary point in November and December, especially as our hospital capacity that we built up over last spring, was very nearly overwhelmed. And we can't get there again. But we've also seen improvements since then. We've seen, our case growth, test positivity, and hospitalizations, are elevated, but they are significantly down from where they were in November. And the vaccines are certainly absolutely a bright spot on the horizon, but it's going to take a while for us to be able to vaccinate enough Minnesotans to reach herd immunity. We know that the virus spreads wherever people gather, which is why we have to remain diligent about masks, social distancing, and getting tested regularly. And our hands are still on that dial. If we see that we are facing another surge that threatens our hospital capacity, we will dial back. And I want to be really clear that, with the opening of restaurants and other venues across the state, we are not saying that it is safe and that there is no risk. There is risk anytime you make a decision to leave your house, right? And so, Heidi, I'll just say personally for my family, we've been doing our part by getting takeout multiple times per week, and we'll continue to do that. I am not going to eat in a restaurant in person for a while. But that is, a risk that we have assessed for our own family, and each individual and family will have to make that decision for themselves.
You're echoing with what one of our listeners wrote in. Charlie from Popaski wrote to us, and he said the same kind of thing. He said, I understand the business's needs, but I'm not clear how the data supports opening it up, meaning restaurants. He said, personally, we won't be entering those establishments. And then he wanted to make sure he told you that they are glad that you join us so clearly and passionately. And a thanks to Ampers and Northern Community Radio for bringing these conversations forward.
Well, thanks, Charlie. I appreciate that. And I just think that we are in a position, right, where Minnesotans should need to, should continue to take precautions to combat the spread of the virus in their community. And for some families like mine, that means not visiting restaurants or other indoor spaces, but you have to make those decisions for yourself. And the best thing that we can do for the economy and for restaurants who've been hardest hit is, to continue to keep the virus at manageable levels. But again, get that takeout, Charlie and everybody else. It's one of the ways that we can continue to sustain our restaurant culture, which is really phenomenal in the state. But also determining what is best for you and your family.
Yeah, one of our listeners wanted to know whether you had heard from health officials about if we have seen an impact yet from the holidays we just went through.
So, you know, when it comes to the holidays, you know, we are still monitoring, right? We're still monitoring those levels, but it takes up to a full 14 days to show symptoms. So the best data that we can gather is, you know, always looking backward. And it appears that Minnesotans were cautious with their Thanksgiving gatherings, for which we are grateful. We didn't see a big spike in cases or hospitalizations from those gatherings if they did them. The pause that we put in effect has really brought down the number of new cases pretty dramatically and reduced the pressure on our hospital emergency rooms and ICUs. So we've gone from admitting 300 people to ICUs a day in the middle of November to fewer than 60 to 80 a day in the beginning of January. And so we're going to know more about Christmas and New Year celebrations in the coming weeks. But if I have to tell you, and don't tell my mom this, but I enjoyed having a very quiet Christmas with my family. So, you know, I hope that others did as well. And just knowing that the choices that we made to stay safe are going to ensure that more folks will be with us the next time the holidays roll around.
You're listening to a statewide conversation on COVID-19 with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, made possible by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota communities. Let's stick with restaurants. Another question came from Carol from Northeast Minneapolis. She said, many restaurants are on the brink of going under. What are you and the governor going to do to stop that from happening?
Well, you know, that goes back to, you know, what we've just been talking about. We have, you know, done quite a bit, you know, to ensure that we are reminding people to, again, get takeout and to frequent these restaurants. But restaurants have had an extremely challenging year, and we know that many of them are in a very tough place. Some good news is that we recently worked with the state legislature to pass $216 million in support for businesses impacted by the pandemic. And so restaurants who experienced a 30% drop in income will receive a direct check from the Department of Revenue. And I can tell you that we are hoping the federal government's reinstatement of the PPP program will also be something that helps folks stay in business. And I will just be very candid. I am feeling also hopeful after the election results on Tuesday that additional support will be coming to states for the state as a whole and for additional businesses with an administration and a Congress that is interested in doing more to support Americans and Minnesotans during this time.
You know, we started off talking about kind of politics and the current time we're in and how difficult it is. And I saw earlier this week, as the legislature began on Tuesday, their 2021 session, I saw that, you know, according to rules, you were there. You were the one that before they nominated their president of the Senate, and you weren't necessarily happy with how the Senate was handling the pandemic.
Well, I will say this, that gaveling in the Senate at the beginning of the legislative session is one of the three constitutional duties that are listed in my job description, and it's something that I take very, very seriously. Of course, this first day of session was unlike any other. Many of our legislators were sworn in via Zoom, and the majority of my colleagues in the legislature and all of the staff wore masks. So people may not have been able to see, right, it's, you know, camera angles on the floor, that the majority of people were wearing masks, but there were certainly some members of the legislature who have repeatedly refused to abide by public health guidance and, frankly, common courtesy for their colleagues and hardworking staff, partisan and nonpartisan, who serve the people of Minnesota. And, you know, it is frustrating for sure, but it's also incredibly serious. On Tuesday, the Senate honored Senator Jerry Rolfe, who lost his life due to complications from COVID-19 on the floor of the Senate. And, you know, Senator Rolfe and I didn't always agree on specific policies, but he was an eminently decent and good man who was dedicated to public service. And his loss is really deeply felt. COVID-19 has touched the halls of our Capitol. You know, both Attorney General Ellison and I have lost immediate family members to this disease. And so to pretend that it hasn't touched our lives and the lives of the people who work inside that building every day is not only dangerous, it is disrespectful to the memory of those that we have lost and to families like mine who are mourning that loss. And just put on a mask, everybody. Get over yourself.
Before we get to the questions on vaccines, we heard from someone who posted on Facebook, and they wanted you to remind listeners how COVID is spread. They want to know, can you get it if you walk into a space where an infected person has been but then left? Like, does the virus hang in the air even after they are gone? Or would they have to be there spewing out the virus was the question.
Spewing. That's not a great visual, but important to, you know, just to think about here. The vast majority of cases are caused by airborne spread. People breathe it out, it floats in the air, and then gets inhaled by someone else. And so, you know, this is still new, but we have learned a lot, and we know that that is how it's spread, which is why masks are so important, and why gyms and bars and restaurants can be big spreaders. And it spreads in restaurants and bars because people aren't wearing masks and, you know, they're sitting in close proximity to each other for extended period of time. Even if you're masked in a gym, right, and you're breathing hard in a confined area, you know, making a cloud of airborne virus around you. So we have to keep using those masks. And again, you know, with the new guidelines for folks that restaurants are going to close, right, also after 10 p.m., is because the more drinks you have, the more laissez-faire you become about making sure that you're practicing, you know, those good guidelines of mask wearing and, you know, distancing, et cetera. So just, yes, it is airborne. It's why we wear masks. And it's just I appreciate the question because this is a good reminder. It sort of feels like it's with us all the time, but like that's what happens, y'all.
Right. And also I think a good time to remember, you know, don't listen to everything you're seeing. Don't believe everything you're seeing on social media. I think we're in a very odd time where everyone seems to be an expert on this. And do some real digging if you want to know those exact answers or continue listening to these kinds of conversations. So let's get into the vaccine. We had a question by email. There's been criticism in the press that Minnesota's moving slower than other states when it comes to getting people vaccinated. Is that true? Why is it taking us longer?
So, you know, this is, again, I think, like, there's lots of misinformation that is out there about vaccines. First, we're not taking longer than expected. We're on schedule. Currently, Minnesota is 22nd in the nation when it comes to giving out vaccines. And, you know, that varies a bit from day to day. But, you know, we feel very confident that, you know, we're working with our healthcare partners to make sure they're vaccinating as efficiently as possible. And one of the lessons that the state learned during the H1N1 outbreak was not to overpromise. Unfortunately, that's what's happened on the federal level when the administration officials, you know, said that they would vaccinate 20 million people by the end of the year. The Pfizer vaccine wasn't even approved until the 11th of December, and we didn't receive our first doses until the 18th. And then we got a big shipment of Pfizer on Christmas Eve. So our first big shipment of Moderna came in on New Year's Eve. And you know, we've also had to hold over 125,000 doses aside for our federal program to vaccinate people who are in long-term care facilities. And that is being run by a partnership with CVS, Walgreens, and Thrifty White Pharmacies. So that effort is getting off to a slower start nationally because of those change has had the chains of pharmacies have had a difficult time staffing up for the job. So, you know, as the end of at the end of 2020, we had received 288,000 doses of vaccine, and more than 104,000 needles have gone in arms as of today. And we will be continuing to update Minnesotans on the vaccine and those developments. But Heidi, I don't know if you saw the breaking news just this afternoon that the President-elect Biden announced that he would just be releasing all of the vaccine to states as soon as he comes into office. And I can tell you that is a very hopeful development that we've heard today.
Yeah, good to hear. Another question came in. What do you know about carrying the virus even after you have gotten vaccinated? Is that being studied right now?
So, you know, getting the vaccine is not a free ticket to do whatever you want. You know, we know that the vaccines stop people from either getting COVID or developing a severe form of the disease. But we still don't know, and research, you know, into someone's ability to spread it asymptomatically is still going on. So you can bet after I receive the vaccine, I'm going to continue to wear a mask. And I'm going to continue to do what I need to do to protect others from contracting COVID-19. So the short answer really is we don't know. And the Minnesota Department of Health is going to develop guidance on that as more of the data becomes available. But, you know, again, after you get vaccinated, you're still going to have to wear a mask and socially distance and continue to follow all the mitigation guidance until we have vaccinated enough people in this state and in this country to ensure that we will not see COVID spread at the levels we've seen previously.
We got a couple of questions from Scott from Cohasset, and he wanted to know, what does the Department of Health think about recent suggestions to give just one-shot vaccinations as a faster way to get more people immunized?
You know, we have to go with the science, and the studies that have been done on those vaccines show they're most effective when they are given in two doses. So if more data comes out that says it's safe to do it in another way and we can change it up, we will do that, but that hasn't been done as of yet. And then I would also say, you know, there's some, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that is coming up is likely a one-doser. But we will just continue to administer the vaccine in the way that science dictates its effectiveness.
Scott also wanted to know whether the Department of Health is considering issuing cards to vaccinated people so that they could use as IDs for admission to public places.
So that's a, you know, that is a big issue. To be honest, even if we wanted to do something that is like that as a state, it would take a lot of work to put it together because we need a secure and reliable system that didn't cause confusion or unfairly deny people who can't get vaccinated the ability to go out. So, you know, the best path forward is to really focus on getting everyone vaccinated and ending the pandemic once and for all. Once everyone is safe, we can reopen and rebuild and recover. But, you know, if something like that were to occur, I think that would be best done by the federal government and not state by state.
We had a question that came in this week about people who don't want to get this vaccination. That was something we heard a lot about before they were here. So they're wondering if what you know about the numbers. Public health workers were fearing this. Will enough people agree to get vaccinated so that we do have that herd protection?
So this is, you know, something that we, you know, right now is just sort of anecdotally what we've heard, you know, but at this point, we're just beginning, right, to get limited data on all of it. We don't have enough information to draw really any conclusions. But the good news is that we are overwhelmed with people who do want to be vaccinated. And as more people are vaccinated, I think that will help provide reassurance to those who are on the fence. And here's the deal. To end the pandemic, 80% of our population will have to be vaccinated. And we're going to do all that we can to really assure people that the vaccine is safe and effective. And I will, as soon as I can get that vaccine in my arm, right, when it is my time, you know, I will take selfies and videotape it and put it all over the place so that people know, you know, that it is safe and effective. And the same way, frankly, that, you know, I got my flu shot, and Heidi, you got your flu shot,
yes.
Right? I think vaccines are really important, just overall for our public health. And it's one of the ways that we can just take care of each other, especially for those who cannot take, who cannot get a vaccination for a whole host of things, right? That's why it's important that if you can do it, you do it.
Yeah, my boss just sent me a note saying that she found out her son just got a vaccination, and she used the word ecstatic. And that's not even her getting a vaccine, but she's so excited that we are on this road right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. We've run out of time, but as always, we thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Be safe, everybody.
Thanks. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state of Minnesota in partnership with Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities. It's also made possible by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation, KAXE.org, and don't forget, you can ask a question about the state's response to COVID. Call 612-562-9895 and leave a message or email covid@ampers.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Stay safe and thanks for listening.